Welcome to Mustard Mayonnaise. I'm Matt.
I am Richard.
And we talk about things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest, no matter how briefly that may happen.
Exactly.
That can be movies, DVDs, TV, video games, high def, some technology.
Internet porn.
Really doesn't have to be topical either.
Yeah, exactly.
We're doing this on a Thursday night for various scheduling reasons.
Mm-hmm. We lead busy lives.
I was camping last Labor Day. And
did you really? Where'd you go?
Some friends' parents have property on Big Lake, which is near Mount Vernon.
Wow, cool.
And they've got jet skis.
Oh, cool.
Let me tell you, any chance to ride a jet ski for free, you should take that chance.
Oh, absolutely.
So we were doing that. And then there was a miscommunication on actual Monday of whether you were busy
or not. Well, I was planning on going to the local Seattle Big Bumbershoot event, and then my pocketbook told me you're not going to Bumbershoot, so I didn't go.
Anyway, and we're not going to be able to do it Sunday, so here we are on a Thursday with some weird timing. Many, many things to talk about. It's the football season has officially kicked off.
I know, I'm so excited.
The game is playing behind me. It's being recorded at my house, so I am facing away
from
the
TV. And I am multi-tracking, and it's exciting
multi-tracking.
Already. Multi-tasking.
Multi-something. Clearly demonstrating the success with which you are multitasking.
Well, I'm looking at Adobe Audition here, and it has the word multi-track it through me. But anyway, I won't give anything away about this awesome game that I'm staring at right now. What's on the list?
And it would be illegal for us to describe what's going on.
Oh, that's
then
right.
We're doing play-by-play.
I know. That's unbelievable the way they do that.
I think right now the biggest story is this ABC path to 9/11
Oh,
thing.
My God. That's blowing up.
And we have to be very careful to not go off on our lefty
tangent.
Liberal political tangent. Which
but
is
it was,
hard
it was
for us,
interesting, but the play, because it reminds me very much when remember the Reagan's series came out?
Vaguely. Well, we should explain what's going on.
Okay.
ABC has four-hour miniseries, a two-parter. It's called The Path to 9/11.
Supposedly based on the hearings.
They're calling it a docudrama based on the 9/11 Commission's report.
Yep.
And that's apparently how they've been advertising it and promoting it. I haven't actually seen any advertising or promotion for whatever reason, but that's what I've heard from many sources, despite the fact that, in fact, it is not endorsed by the commissioners, only the Republican commissioners.
Just one. What's his name? Keene or
Keene? Yeah, Keene. K-E-A-N. Ben Vanista.
Yep.
Has said.
Member of the commission.
Democratic member has said it's. And the problem is that they're calling it a docudrama and it's based on, but there's more than one scene in here, which is completely fictitious, and paints the Clinton administration and various members of it an incredibly poor light, as in we've got a CIA agent about ready to storm the house and kill bin Laden, and calls Sandy Berger and
Sandy Berger hangs up.
I need permission, and I have to talk to the president. No, we're not going to. No, the permission isn't given, and bin Laden gets away. Never happened. Completely fictitious. Completely made up.
Yep.
Ridiculous.
Well, appalling.
And the problem is that they're sort of touting this as the truth,
exactly,
when it's not. If you're going to say it's a movie, fine. Who cares?
Yeah.
You know, have portrayed President Clinton as Moe from the Three Stooges, and it's vaguely offensive, but it's a movie, and you know, you can get away with that. But as long as you're touting it.
Well, and that's the thing. They are touting it kind of like the equivalent of it would be United 93, the movie, which was touted as we're trying to do our best guess of what we do know, and the things that we know happened, we want it to be as real as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And here it's like they have Sandy Berger and they freely admit this was the feel of what happened, and we needed to condense in this one scene. So they're basically saying Sandy Berger hung up on this guy, thus ruining our chances of getting bin Laden. And it did not happen. It's appalling.
And the more you look into the actual story, where Path to 9/11 was written by some ultra right wing, ultra conservative people, I think one of them is actually like friends with Rush Limbaugh or something like that. I mean, I just kind of pulling that out of my butt for remembering a comment someone made, but ABC also makes like 900 screener copies and sends them out to basically
conservative blogs.
Not just that, but basically the right wing, including conservative blogs and Rush Limbaugh and anybody that could drum up right wing positive press for it, while not sending it to pretty much anybody on the left, including former President Clinton, Madeleine Albright, former Secretary of State. And this has blown up to the point where today or late yesterday, President Clinton's lawyer released a statement saying, ABC, you either need to fix these scenes or not broadcast this. Yep. And, you know, the Democratic Party is actually making a statement now saying, ABC, you need to not do this. This is essentially propaganda.
Absolutely.
And that's sort of where it gets, I hadn't thought of it that way, but they're right. It's essentially propaganda when you have this many people saying, it didn't happen like this. You can't portray it in that manner.
You could say it's libelous, but for no other reason, the stakes are pretty high here. They should, if they're responsible, have a much higher standard. The one thing that they risk is the fact that there's the public airwaves, and ABC actually owns certain stations. And to some extent, they have a slightly higher standard because the government, the soon to be Democratic controlled government, or partially, has an ability to make life hard for them. So that's one reason why I'm surprised they would go into such an overtly conservative direction.
God, it boggles the mind because now it's becoming a PR disaster.
Absolutely.
And good, because I find the whole thing repugnant. And you're right. You started to mention the series, The Reagans, which was a mini series about the Reagan family.
Yeah.
And the conservative that CBS did, and the conservative sort of decided they didn't like the way Reagan was being portrayed.
And they killed the show.
And put up a stink, and CBS pulled it.
Yep.
And this is almost exactly... And I don't think anybody was saying that the Reagans was showing scenes that never happened.
No.
I don't recall that being an accusation.
Well, they were... Actually, I'm not so sure about that, but they were... Yeah, they were implying some things, and I think they had a legitimate point to some of these things, but essentially the series was actually really positive to Reagan. I think they should have just chilled out for some reason, but it's the exact same parallel. They got it pulled, and I think that was a much smaller stakes than this thing.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a fascinating story, which is in progress. We don't really know what's going to happen. It's set to be broadcast this Sunday and Monday.
You know what's funny about this whole thing? And again, I'm not going to go all political on that, but this is so clearly demonstrative that there's no liberal media elite running things. If you listen to talk radio, somehow it's going to be the reason this is an issue is because of the liberal media elite. It's not proof that there isn't one. It's the response to it shows that there is one, and it's powerful, and they're getting it pulled. There's simply no example in the world that's going to prove to somebody who believes there's a liberal media elite running things to prove that there isn't, because this would be the prime example. Anyway, fascinating story. What a huge story. And man, Disney, I wonder if they really, you just wonder in retrospect how much thinking they did and who made those decisions.
And I was pretty neutral about Disney and ABC. They were just there and I didn't really care. And I wasn't a fan of Eisner, but so what?
Yep.
And now I'm definitely having negative thoughts towards both Disney and ABC.
Yep.
Because this is just so blatantly repugnant.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on.
Let's talk about Paris Hilton.
Okay. I do have something. It wasn't on my list.
No, I was just, you heard she got pulled over for drunk driving today.
Driving into work this morning, I listened to two different radio morning shows that mentioned that Paris Hilton was arrested last night for having a DUI and blowing like a .8.
.8, exactly at the definition.
And it's funny because both the morning shows were saying, well, essentially saying, A, who cares? Yep. Why is this a story? And B, they talked at much greater length about the fact that she was driving a Mercedes McLaren SLR, which is essentially a $500,000 vehicle. It's like a V12. It's like the best. I mean, Mercedes quality kind of stinks lately, but it's the best car Mercedes makes. And the TJs were just talking more about that.
And you know where she was going. She was going to the In-N-Out Burger to get a burger. But you know, it's funny. The reason I thought it was interesting is because I can't remember his name, but her publicist, they had this awesome article, and I think it was Vanity Fair about a month ago, about this dude who was like the super publicist, and he was like John Lennon's publicist and all this other stuff, and now he's like following Paris Hilton around. It was funny, in the article he basically says, they're kind of making fun of him for being Paris Hilton's publicist, and he basically saying, boy, if I'm doing this a year from now, please kill me. But today, hearing him talk and describe and what's going on, man, that guy was good. I mean, just hearing him be as apparently open about what had happened, but in reality, undercutting the what was happening to say she had a drink. She was at the very, very low threat, low end legally and talk or legally whatever. And, but she was not drunk. And I mean, the guy, he was really good. And I never realized you don't usually directly hear publicists. You experience their work because of what they do. Well, anyway, with him, I just thought, man, this guy's brilliant. It was great. It was cool to see a publicist at work and hear how he really made this story seem a lot less than it was. I mean, as we all know, Star's drunk driving can lead to a Mel Gibson thing, or it can be nothing. And he somehow is kind of turning it for Paris Hilton. Anyway, it was interesting. God, she's a dope though, by the way. Somebody pointed out that, you know, it's probably, they probably arrest her because she was slurring her words and using, you know, and talking funny. And then they were pointing out that, well, how the hell could you, what's that indicative of her being drunk? That's her indicative of being Paris Hilton. Anyway, stupid. So let's move on.
A couple weeks ago was the Emmys.
Yep.
Which I actually watched, hadn't planned on it, but there was really nothing else on.
What'd you think?
I really enjoyed the show. By and large, almost the whole thing. I think we fast forwarded through the president of the Emmy Arts and Sciences, whatever.
Oh, they do that in the Emmys too?
We fast forwarded through his speech, and we fast forwarded through one other section. Can't remember what it was. But by and large, very entertaining. Yeah. Conan O'Brien did a great job.
God, he's good.
They did this fun, this little sketch where he puts himself in the series, you know, starts out on a plane, it crashes, suddenly he's on the island with Lost.
Yep.
And he's like, I'm going down the hatch, come with me. And Hurley says, dude, we weren't invited this year.
That was such a perfect line, too. It was so good. Because it won the best drama last year. It didn't even get nominated. And the series is as good as it was last year.
Anyway, so he does that. And, you know, in his opening shtick, Conan talks about the fact that, you know, there was some controversy and Lost wasn't nominated. And the fact that, what's her foot, was it Blythe Danner?
No. For the one that was... The one that got the 14 second.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who it was. Yeah. The actress who was nominated for a 14 second performance.
Yeah, Ellen Burstyn.
They actually mentioned that. And then they did the whole song and dance number about how NBC sucks.
It was so funny, too.
Oh, man, that was, I mean, it was brutal.
You got trouble right here in NBC or whatever it was. It was really funny.
And, you know, hats off to NBC for letting Conan do it. You know, it's, if you can't make fun of yourself, honestly.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, networks generally, they let, you know, David Letterman, he has a history of calling, you know, whatever studio or whatever network he works for as weasels and pinheads. And it's kind of a joke or whatever. But Conan, he really gets specific. And he really, it's not just this general, I work for weasels. They've screwed the royal pooch. He doesn't hold any punches. And I just find that incredible. I love it that he does that. And remember, you know, they've extended this offer. He's going to replace, you know, Leno on the Tonight Show. Well, they could pull that at any time. And it just seems funny. His big opportunity for prime time. What does he do? He literally pees on the hand that's giving him the great opportunity. I find that so cool. Love the guy. It was hilarious.
Anyway, it was a very, very entertaining show throughout. Certainly the highlight, Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert getting up there to distribute the reality TV Emmys. And
who he got beat by.
That was Stephen Colbert gets up there. I got beat by Barry Manilow. At least if I'd gotten beaten by Wolverine, he's got claws for hands.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, very just an entertaining show.
Yep.
Although it kind of belies, I don't know, well, it's interesting that the best drama, 24, is something that you and I make fun of.
Yeah.
Although I make fun of it not having seen it in 3 years.
I actually periodically check in. I like the show, but boy, that's not... It's an episodic soap opera. It's not really a drama. or episodic, you know, action thing. It's not really a drama. It's a pretty good show, but it's kind of, well, it just seems dumb. Like
it's essentially the same thing.
You know, a drama, honestly, like some of the shows every on year. HBO, The Sopranos, which I don't even think got nominated. The Wire, actually The Wire didn't run last year, but a lot of these shows, The Shield, how could 24 win over those? It kind of stuns me.
Moving along. I saw The Illusionist.
Oh yeah, what'd you think of that? Ed Norton and who else? Jessica Biel.
Paul Giamatti.
That's right. Oh, and what's his name? The British dude?
Rufus Sewell.
Cool actor.
You
said it was 80% good.
I thought it was about 80% of a good movie, and I'm a little more down on it the more time passes.
Really?
It's a good looking movie.
Yep.
It's a period piece. Set in Vienna. It's very good looking. I by and large enjoyed the acting by everybody involved. Although
how was Ed Norton?
He was fine. I mean, nobody really nobody really.
Because when that guy gets a meaty role, there's nobody better than him, but this didn't strike me as that kind of role.
Not really.
Yeah.
It didn't, you know, nobody really, it was serviceable.
Yeah.
Like I could do any better. But, you know, the more it went along, the more you're kind of like, and then at the end, there's sort of this moment, which is very reminiscent of a scene in The Usual Suspects. You know, the camera sort of wheeling around this character as he's realizing things and, it was just, that so turned me off.
Oh, no.
In the end, the movie, it wasn't clever enough.
Yeah.
It had a few too many cliches, and it didn't quite justify itself enough.
Hmm.
It's funny, there's this guy, you know, as you're watching the opening credits, and you could see it's a Bob Yari, I think was the name. Bob Yari production.
He's the famous dude that's like being sued because he was like a producer on Crash, but didn't get credit.
Oh,
so
jackass.
Yeah, he didn't get credit. And but you know, it's funny. He didn't get credit. And so he sued because he like couldn't get an Oscar for it. And then at The Illusionist, he was also feuding with the other producers of The Illusionist.
Well, his name appears like four or five different times in the various production credits.
Yep.
Which I found, it certainly sticks out. Oh, also, this was the first time I experienced a moth landing on the plate glass just in front of the lens of the projector.
Oh, my God. You think that's so hot it would like burn to a crisp.
I don't know what the exponential drop off in heat is the further you get away, but those plates are usually maybe 6 inches away from the lens.
Okay.
But God, it was irritating. You see, this moth just flies in and the audience is like, there's a moth. And you're like, could somebody on the edge maybe go tell someone?
Yeah.
I mean, granted, in that instance, I don't know what the theater could do about it aside from station someone there to wave the moth if it comes up.
It's amazing how though people will just sit there forever. I instantly now, with any problem, I instantly get up and tell people because I realize nobody will ever do anything. They'll sit there and put up with it for an entire, you know, the entire length of the movie.
It problem. Anyway, it left me looking forward to The Prestige because I know that one will be good.
Yep.
So I would say, you know, maybe use DVD bin, catch it on cable. I don't know that I would buy a new DVD or pay.
I like Ed Norton and I will see it because I like Ed Norton, but I've heard similar reviews the one you're saying.
Next on the list, and I'm not even really sure why I put this down. Katie Couric has now officially started CBS News.
Did you watch it?
No, because I honestly haven't watched network news in, let's see, I'm 31, 17 years? I don't know. It has been a long, long time since I watched network news.
That's the amazing thing. They talk about it and it matters.
A lot of people in the middle of the country apparently still watch network news. What, 23 million, I think, was the three major networks are splitting an audience of 23 million people a night.
That's actually a lot more than I thought, but literally 20 years ago, it was like 70 million.
Yeah. And I read some comment from a blogger saying as soon as she said she was going to try and deliver a fair and balanced commentary and that Rush Limbaugh was going to help her do that, he's like, I give up. Goodbye.
I didn't watch the first. I watched the second night. And what that was about was they had this segment, their free speech segment. Essentially, they invite somebody. It might be a prominent person, might be somebody involved, might be just an average Joe citizen, for about 2 or 3 minutes to talk about an issue every night. Rush Limbaugh is going to be the third guest. So he's on today, I think.
Does Rush Limbaugh really need a large media outlet?
Well, yeah, no, obviously not. But then again, the lady yesterday was talking about immigrant reform and she worked for some local immigrant rights group or whatever.
That's great. She can use a large media outlet. Rush Limbaugh has.
I would argue that what they're doing, if they keep up with it, if they keep up with this segment over the course of a year, yeah, I would say over the course of the year, yeah, Rush Limbaugh can do one and Immigrant Rightly can do another and a million other people can do others. That would be kind of what their take is. Why third one in? Is it Rush Limbaugh? Now, what's more important, though, is does it work on the show? And it felt weird. It was basically what it is. It's basically giving somebody a 300-word editorial that they can speak. And like this, the lady Shram ahead on the of time. Street. Well, the lady that was interviewed the second day, she didn't know how to speak. And when people do speak editorials, it comes across weird. So it was kind of a stilted segment. That said, watching it, I kind of enjoyed it. I don't watch news ever either. Although now that ABC has a podcast kind of version of their news, I actually been watching that, but I don't watch it either. I kind of watch it to see what it was. I mean, she held herself pretty well. It's not relevant anymore. There's just
so much hullabaloo about this and about, you know, her. God, what morning show did she leave? I can't even remember.
The Today Show.
See, and God, people make such a big deal about the morning shows. I've never watched those shows. I don't turn on the TV in the morning.
Well, it's funny
that's my time.
The connection of it, it was amazing. It was like there was third generation hullabaloo from it. So she leaves to go to CBS. So there's hullabaloo there, but it creates this huge hullabaloo at who's going to replace her. So they hire Meredith Vieira. So there's this huge hullabaloo at the Today Show for Meredith Vieira.
You're taking away the power of the word I started. Not that it's my word.
Sorry. So then Meredith Vieira has to leave The View. So there's more hullabaloo at The View because they brought in Rosie O'Donnell, which led to the ouster of Star Jones and changing it there. So it's literally Katie Couric. The reason there's so much buzz is because she was just creating hullabaloo everywhere. It was kind of fascinating to see how it all worked.
Here we are podcasting about entertainment, but there's a point where you're like, who cares?
Yeah, I agree.
And to me, mentioning it at all is just to bring up that point. I don't care, despite the fact we're talking about it. But, you know, all this fuss about network news and more, especially the morning shows.
Yeah.
Well,
I agree, except for the one standpoint of The View is just, oh, what a dreadful show. That said, I love Rosie O'Donnell, especially since she came out of the closet. She's got cool opinions. She really speaks her mind. And I think that hopefully, because they have this nut job right winger, Elizabeth Filarski Hasselbeck, you know, what's Hasselbeck's sister-in-law, Matt Hasselbeck.
No way.
Yeah, it's, you know, she was on Survivor and she is a nutbag right winger but she can never be articulate.
Well, I will not hold that against our beloved quarterback, Matt Hasselbeck.
So she drives you nuts, but Rosie is smart as all get out. So I'm hoping that show will get interesting again. Not that I have ever watched it at all, but I like Rosie O'Donnell. So anyway, what's next on the list?
All right. To the surprise of almost nobody that was paying attention, Sony has shot itself in the foot again by announcing they're pushing back the European launch of the PlayStation 3 by 4 months past Christmas into spring, and reducing the number that they were selling in Japan and the US to a combined 500,000.
So they just can't build the machines.
There's a problem. The blue diode, which helps in emitting the actual laser for the Blu-ray drive, when they tried to ramp it up to mass production, they had problems. So they literally cannot supply enough of the component for the drive.
And you know what? You know what the problem is? Sony, you remember the Fifth Element?
Why, they had those guns? I do.
Sony has those guns that when they shoot, the bullets come out. No matter where they point, they're going to come out and shoot them. And that's what they do. No matter what Sony does, they're shooting themselves.
Well, you know, a couple people have pointed out, if Sony had just been honest to begin with, instead of ridiculously insisting, no, we're shipping 4 or 5 million by the end of the year, there's no problem. Instead of, you know, and now people are saying, you know, screw you, Sony.
Yep.
Except for Microsoft and Nintendo, who are doing the dance of joy.
I know.
Price cut. We don't need no stinking price cut.
Microsoft's just going, oh my God, we have Christmas to ourselves. I mean, they're
essentially
so happy.
Yeah. It's insane. Yeah. It really, and they're going to have Gears of War out in November.
Microsoft?
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is going to be the big driving game for the Christmas season.
So that's this year's Halo, basically.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just nuts that Sony cannot get their act together.
Yep.
I
love Sony. They're so lovable.
As I make ridiculous noises. So next, this is a combined story. Two different intertwined elements here. Today, Amazon announced their movie download service.
Yeah, you were saying that. What's that all about?
So you did not check it out.
I didn't. I just saw it before you came over here. Tell me. Inform Kemosabe.
Problem is, I skimmed it with about 20 seconds worth of research, so yep. I'm not terribly informed. If I remember correctly, it's called Unbox.
Yep.
And basically, it's you download Windows Media files that plays in Amazon's own player. You can either rent movies, in which case you download it. You have it for 30 days, and then 24 hours after you press play, it self-destructs or something. Or you can buy movies, in which case you're allowed to have the download on two computers. If the hard drive crashes, you're allowed to re-download it. You can archive it to a DVD, but it's not a playable DVD.
Jesus.
And the prices range like from $9 to $20. So it doesn't sound like a bad solution, honestly, but it's not all that compelling either.
Honestly, whenever they talk about, you have to play it in their player, I friggin' hate that. It's like, okay, I hate DRM, but they've got it built in to Windows Media Player. Just let it play in that. Don't make some ridiculous cobbled together thing. Because invariably, the media players, you can't double-click on it and let the borders disappear. You end up watching whatever they have.
I think I saw that the question of resolution was up in the air from the thing I read, but they assumed it was, I guess, DVD quality was used. So people were assuming 720 by 480, and that there's a way to output. You can output the signal from the computer to the TV, so thus taking care of the problem you just mentioned, but it's not easy.
Yeah.
And it ties into, I was listening to an older This Week in Media podcast, and they were talking a lot about this sort of thing, and basically movie download services and what works and what doesn't. And someone pointed out that, you know, Apple continues to go to the studios and say, we want to make this easy for the user, the end consumer. Everyone else just wants to make it easy for Hollywood, for the content owners. And that's the problem.
Yep.
That where you get Amazon, who's bending over backwards to please the studios, and delivering a really unexciting experience to the end user.
Yeah.
Whereas Apple keeps hammering on, if it's not easy for the end user, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And you look at the success of iTunes. I mean, the iPod is great, but Apple has done a fantastic job of making it easy for people to download music and listen to it on their iPods. They really have.
Yep.
And that sort of ties into the other story of Apple has a press event this Tuesday in which it is everyone is saying that they're going to reveal their iTunes movie download service.
Wait, just one more thing. He always finalize it with the last thing.
Yeah, but you never know what that one thing will actually be. Apparently Disney is the only studio that they're on board with, despite Lionsgate saying that they were, like the CEO or the CFO of Lionsgate said that they were doing it. So they may or may not be involved, but you know, sort of the rumors sort of say only Disney right now, and hopefully they want to prove the model and then get other studios to jump on board.
So is it going to be iTunes resolution, or are they bumping up the resolution?
it has to be, it has to be better resolution than iPod only. So the other thing, the tied in rumor with that would be, are they finally going to release their living room box?
Yeah.
Their, you know, a component hardware piece, which can either store the movies or work with a streaming doohickey.
Yep.
Because, you know, more and more they just released some new iMac, or a new iMac, and they bumped the specs last week. And so, like, I think the biggest iMac now is 23 inches.
Yep.
And there's, you know, it's got front row, and that's great for a dorm room. I don't want to watch a movie on a 23-inch screen.
Yeah.
I don't care how nice it is. That's too small.
Yeah, and sure, that was the best thing you could ever get a couple of years ago, but it's insanely small.
And so
is so much higher than that now.
They have to output to basically an HD TV. They have to.
Yep.
So will they finally release the hardware to go along with this and somehow tie it all together? I hope so, because you're looking at Amazon and other people finally catching up and really, you know, they've been movie download services for years now, but they're just not well known because people don't, it takes forever to download the movies.
It's like it's a streaming experience, or it's like others.
Well, it's not, whoever's providing it hasn't provided an experience that's good, a compelling, a lot of movies end up being $20. And for that, you can buy the DVD, watch it whenever you want and get the extras.
Yeah.
So on one hand, I hope Apple finally pulls the trigger. On the other hand, I don't want to have to buy something else.
Yeah,
because I've been wanting to buy whatever they can give me forever, and I'm looking at a really expensive fall between that and a laptop and an HD TV.
Are you getting a laptop too?
Mine's.
You're gonna get the new.
I'm waiting for the next MacBook Pro revision.
That's what they were saying. They might be announcing that at this thing.
It could be. I mean, we're looking at around the right time frame for the last time they revved it.
How much are they going to charge for one of those things?
Oh, I don't know. It's probably around I think the range is 2 to 3,000.
Jesus.
I know, but anyway.
What can you do? But you can install Windows on that too, should you want to, and that's kind of a cool offer. So.
Well, at this point, you're looking at Parallels. And there's something else that did essentially the same thing. These programs
Have to have Windows. Yeah, I put Parallels.
You don't need Windows to run Parallels.
No, you don't. But the whole point to having Parallels is so you could install Windows.
No. What? The point to running Parallels is to run Windows programs without needing to run Windows.
What? You can run a program without Windows?
Yeah, you use this thing called Parallels. It's a separate program called Parallels, which uses
Well, I understand that. I bought Parallels for my dad. We installed it, but that was so we could put the Windows operating system on. I wasn't aware you could actually run a program without the operating system.
No, Parallels, that's not what Parallels does. Parallels is essentially an emulator so that when you open the Windows program and it's making calls to the processor, Parallels does its juju and reinterprets those.
Parallels was basically a virtual machine, and it allows you to install. All I know is we used it to install Windows XP on my dad's computer.
No, you didn't need it. All you needed for that was Boot Camp.
Well, the problem with Boot Camp is that Boot Camp, you have to run one or the other. Parallels allows you to run it as a virtual machine while you're running the Apple software,
okay, so
you can
switch back and forth. That is,
and that's
true.
Why we got it. It was $90, but it was brilliant. But I think the whole planet is waiting for Apple to buy Parallels so they can incorporate that feature into it. But anyway, honestly, I've been using that for a couple weeks at my dad's house. I still sit there and log on and go, God dang, I am using Windows on a Mac. I mean, I keep looking at the logo on the side of the computer. It just throws me every single time. It's such a sweet, cool thing. Clearly the next computer I get is going to be a Macintosh. And that's been 10 years since I would have said that, you know?
I know. All right. You wanted to talk about Viacom and Sumner Redstone.
Oh yeah. Did you hear he canned Tom Freston?
I saw that.
He famously, Viacom, it's run by Summer Redstone. He's like, what, 900?
He's 800. 84.
Oh, God. So he is so cantankerous. So he basically, at various places in Viacom, he would put two people in charge to essentially let them duke it out to see who'd win. And at the top of Viacom, he put Freston, I think Brad Gray, in charge. He kind of split them. And it was funny because like 2 weeks ago, but if your boss ever tells you, I am firmly committed to this person, you know, publicly they make a statement like that. I think it's time to start checking your, you know, packing your bags because you're out, because he was making those statements about Freston. So, but anyway, he got rid of him. And I kept I'm thinking, man, if I was an investor at Viacom, I would be going, you know, Sumner Redstone has really done a lot for this corporation. I mean, incredible, made us a lot of money, but it seems like his moves are random. And it seems totally like he's just doing it to essentially hold on to power himself. And he's 84 years old. That's disturbing to me. I would want him to pick one person, let that person at least try to succeed and just get out of the way. But that's me. So I feel bad for this Freston guy. That said, I could care less about Viacom.
Freston being, you should perhaps explain who that is for the people who don't know.
Well, what do you mean?
Who is Tom Freston? Why should people care?
Well, he's just an executive. But anyway, he was the executive that he if I'm not mistaken, he's been working for that company for a very long time. Maybe I'm confusing it with somebody else. But anyway, so he was put in charge of half of the division or half of it, and like Brad Gray was put in charge of the other half. Like Brad Gray was put in charge of Paramount and some other stuff. Freston was put in charge of, I think, maybe CBS television.
No, Les Moonves was in charge.
Well, but they're underneath, I think, Brad. I don't know. It was, and Les Moonves himself had to share it with somebody else. It was like, I don't know. The whole thing was convoluted and crazy. And to me, it just seems like, why would I want to work with a guy who's pretty much clear? You know, I don't know if you remember you, but you and I were both, we were the editors of the college paper, the Commons. And when I first was, when we were first having the job, this one dude in student government who was essentially charged with picking me or this other guy, who was going to get to be the editor. And he so was worried about having one person in charge that he was trying to get me and the other guy to be co-editors. And we both looked at each other and said, you know, no, I'm not going to do that. You're not going to, because he knew, and he just wanted us to fight it out. I loathe people that try to put two people in charge to fight it out, because their whole point is for them to consolidate power. And that's Sumner Redstone.
Anyway. Okay. Which, have you seen the bit about Paramount is going back to the original Star Trek series and replacing the effects with CGI?
No. The hell stupid idea is that?
I like, you know, the flybys of the ship, and
that's what makes them so great.
There's some sample images up at Dark Horizons is where I saw it.
Oh man.
And you know, I've read a little bit more about it. They're not putting in anything that wasn't there. So they're doing
in jumping tauntauns and stuff.
No, it's their exact shot replacements. So they're not any longer than they already were. They're just replacing the model work with computer work, and like, you know, here's a new shot of Earth to use, and they look pretty.
But you're still gonna you're gonna cut to the interiors where it looks 60s for Mica, and
essentially, on one hand,
I love Star Trek. I hate that idea. Oh.
I think it's fine if, you know, if it's one of those things where they put both versions on the same disc.
And it gives Star Trek again another lease on life, and I love Star Trek, and I love more opportunities for people to discover and enjoy it.
As long as they don't pretend the originals don't exist.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I mean, you're right. You watch a show from the late '60s, maybe the effects aren't going to look quite that great.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that. I really am. Anyway, it was interesting that they've chosen to do that. Hmm. Would you like to spend a moment in silence for the crocodile hunter?
Oh man, poor guy. What an awful story. And I personally, I mean, I don't want to speak ill of the guy, but I kind of loathe a lot of the people like them, because I think that they send such a weird message about wild animals. They go chase them down. That said, the guy had a huge passion for animals. What a horrible way to die. What a horrible thing, man. Poor guy. Seemed like a genuinely nice guy. And so many people really liked the guy, and oh my god, and as they pointed out, it's like, this isn't even a common thing. I mean, apparently like 15 people total have died from stingray attacks. So oh Jesus, just, and it's so gory the way they described it, such a weird freak thing that, I mean, that day I couldn't even eat. I was thinking about a stingray barb in your heart, between your, you know, your ribs. Ooh, geez, poor guy.
Well, yeah. Sorry, dude.
Well, speaking of that, you know, it's kind of funny. I don't know why, but I've been so looking forward to Jackass 2 because I found the first movie like the funniest thing ever. I think it's a guy thing, but it just was so funny. And now when I'm thinking about watching Jackass 2, I just can't help it. I get the feeling I'm going to the whole time be thinking about Steve Irwin and thinking about, because these guys on Jackass do the stupidest things. And I'm convinced some of them's going to get killed at some point. And so it, I don't know, it's maybe going to make Jackass 2 less funny for me. So
didn't see the first one, have no plans to see the second one. It appeals to me.
I don't
not
think,
at all.
I don't. Yeah, I somehow sense it wouldn't. But I'm telling you, I don't think I've ever laughed harder than that first Jackass.
OK,
so
you sent me a story about a horrible effing story about Fox Sports.
Oh, my God.
I skimmed it.
Yeah.
And essentially, there's like this super fan that shows up to every Carolina Panthers NFL game.
He's got a big blue Don King style wig, and he wears all this other stuff, and he calls himself the Cat Man.
But you know, it's like every sports team has one of these people that shows up, and this guy seemed like a cool guy. Didn't seem like he was like whack job.
Nice guy, sports fan. Nice guy, serious fan for the whole time the Panthers have been in existence. In fact, they had a big thing in the NFL Hall of Fame about super fans, and he actually had his picture there and stuff
because
he's the big guy. They love him there.
And so apparently Fox Sports was doing like a fake contest to win a free car. Not exactly sure how it all came together, but in the end, Tony Siragusa hands the guy like a fake little toy car, and the guy thought it was like representative of the car he had just won, but no, haha, it was just this car, the little car.
Well, what's sad? Yeah, you're right.
On national TV,
he didn't get national, it. And, yeah, it was national
nationally
TV,
televised
and,
game.
And Siragusa, he's realizing the guy doesn't even get it. He's like thinking, "Oh, thank God, I've always won a car." And the guy is, "Well, yeah," and he's kind of making jokes. The guy doesn't get it. It was so mean. And what's really sad is they were teasing it. The whole point to this contest was to get somebody to stick around watching TV later on. They just probably thought it up at a minute.
Preseason games. I mean, and I've seen a few preseason games, and as they get later into the games, when the first stringers have dropped out and the third stringers are playing, the announcers could give a rip.
Exactly.
You know, they start rambling on about, "Here's what I saw in my microwave this morning." While they're playing the game, nobody cares.
You know, it's so funny because it's so clear what they absolutely need to do, which is what the guy wrote the article suggested. They need to give this guy a car. And in fact, if they do it, if they do it the right way, the result in positive publicity will make up for the negative, and it will be beneficial to them. They just simply need to go, "Good Lord, we better give this guy a car and do it and get it over with."
Yeah, that was just whoever thought that up was just, you know, it's one thing if you're like trying to get publicity with no budget.
Yeah.
But nobody can accuse Fox of not having a budget.
Yeah.
Come on.
They literally spent billions of dollars for the rights to these games.
Horrible, horrible thing.
Ugh. I'm reading the article. I'm going, "Oh my God, I'm glad I didn't watch it. And if I did, I wonder, like, I'd want to
reach
the TV and strangle
them." Well,
it sounds
like something straight out of The Simpsons, where Don and Marty from KBBL, like when they were, you know, KBBL is going to give me something stupid. And then Bart wins an elephant.
Yep.
Actually, he had to take them to court to get the elephant.
Get the elephant.
Which he then named Stampy.
Most people take the cash. Nope, I'll take the elephant.
That's right. KBBL. But straight out of that. Okay. Another story you sent me. Almost as upsetting. Pirates of the Caribbean 2. Number four movie all time.
Actually, as of this morning, number three.
I was going to say, at the time you sent it, within $6 million of the number. And now it's the number three movie of all time.
It just hit a billion yesterday. And it will probably pass Lord of the Rings for number two. Nobody's going to beat Titanic, obviously. But so clearly it means it's the number two best movie of all time.
Wait, about Lord of the Rings? I thought it passed Harry Potter.
It did. But it's probably going to pass Lord of the Rings to become number two. It's number three right now. So it's a stunning amount of money for what is not a very good movie, even though I enjoyed it. And it really hasn't even slowed down. It actually hasn't hit all the international markets yet.
Yeah, I find that depressing on so many levels.
Yeah, it is.
I really hope that Orlando Bloom and Keira Knightley and Johnny Depp have percentage deals.
Oh, yeah. You know, I saw this video. I think I was on TMZ.com, and they were showing Johnny Depp just pull, you know, they're filming out like off the coast of California, and he comes in and he sits there and patiently signs autographs for everybody. Apparently Orlando Bloom sort of sneaks off, but I'm thinking, hey, that's cool of Johnny Depp. I like stars that are accessible like that. And my perception is that he wasn't, but B, I'm thinking, yeah, you better do this. It's funny because 2-3 years ago, he was famously the actor that people loved, but was never in any big movies. And now, suddenly, oddly, he's literally the biggest actor in the world, and he seems to be understanding of the fans and what he should be doing for them, which was kind of cool, even if the movie was terrible.
Next on the list, have you seen this thing about Idiocracy? Well, you know, you forwarded that to me. Essentially, it's the new movie from Mike Judge.
And the same thing happened to this as what happened to Office Space.
And it's essentially, the movie's been made, and yet the studio is doing everything they can to not promote it, not put it in the theaters.
Yep.
It's like in 2 theaters. It's
well, it was released in only some parts of the country, not released pretty much at all. And it's clear like that they had some pay or play deal. They had to release it, but just get it out. And it's almost like they decided, you know what? It's going to be like Office Space, which we spent a bunch of money promoting. It didn't do diddle, but man, did it clean up on DVD. And it's almost like they've just decided that they're going to clean up and market it as Office Space 2 on DVD.
I
don't know.
I find it extremely...
And what's weird is Mike Judge, he doesn't really give interviews. He doesn't do commentaries. So you're not hearing what he's saying about this. And I find it depressing because reading the reviews of it, it sounds very much like the reviews of Office Space were, which is fun movie. And but you see it again and again, then you realize how great it was. And I get the feeling this will be like that. So,
yep. Anyway, I was just,
and a great title for a movie.
Saw a commercial for The Departed,
which
is the Martin Scorsese film that the undercover cops and mobsters and Jack Nicholson and Matt Damon and Leonardo DiCaprio. Yep. And anyway, it was kind of funny because as we're watching the commercial, you know, my wife was watching it and she's like, oh, was that Matt Damon? Or no, was that Leonardo DiCaprio? And then she sees Matt Damon. Oh no, it was Matt Damon. and then both the names, she's like, oh, both. And what's, I mentioned it because I did almost the exact same thing. I did something very similar. It was like, wait a minute, was that, no, wait, who? Something about Matt Damon and Leonardo DiCaprio. At first, I couldn't differentiate them. I couldn't put them in the same movie. Hmm. I don't know why. It was very bizarre. Well,
you know, what's funny is they actually play, if I'm not mistaken, I saw the original Hong Kong movie, and I think they're basically playing parallel characters.
Yep.
So one
Matt Damon is the mob guy undercover as a cop, and Leonardo DiCaprio is the cop undercover as a mob guy.
You know, it's funny. A lot of the critics are like sort of acting like they're mezzo or whatever. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be cool. So and it was funny watching the trailer, except for the music, which clearly sounds like a Martin Scorsese great soundtrack.
Yeah, but
movie.
I am so burned out on the Stones. I could not hear the Stones again and be just fine my entire life.
I love the Stones.
Okay.
So what else you got, dude?
Let's see. Oh, something I sent you earlier in the week was this is a story that our national audience will not appreciate. We have a chain called Taco Del Mar.
Yep.
It's essentially it's a Mexican takeout, Mexican fast food joint place.
Yeah,
chain.
But it's like it's like a Southern California version of Mexican.
Yeah.
They've got like the decor inside is like surfboards, Baja, and stuff like that. Yeah, Baja and stuff.
But the commercials for this chain are so universally cover your eyes awful.
Ugh.
They are so bad.
You know, honestly, I thought they were
consistently.
They're kind of this throwback commercial with a little soft jingle and people in soft twilight eating at a restaurant. But the first time I saw it, I literally thought it was a spoof. I thought they were trying to mess with us by doing that. And it wasn't until like the third or fourth time through, I'm watching going, there's no hook here. There's no nudging and winking. They're serious that they want this to be a low key happy ad. It's horrible. It actually makes me not want to go to Taco Del Mar. And I love Taco Del Mar.
The ones where like the mom is surfing the supermarket in her cart because she suddenly felt Baja.
Anyway,
I mean, the reason I bring it up, aside from just bitching about, you know, here's the commercials I hate, is just, you and I have done video production.
Yep.
We've done it separately and we've done it together. Yep. We know what it takes for something to look good and to be good.
Yep.
And it can't take much more effort than they're doing now.
I know.
And yet clearly,
it's
just so horrible. And you're thinking, you know, you've got the actors, you've got some equipment. Why not A, get a little more equipment and A, light it correctly, because they're lit horribly.
Yeah.
And then just not suck.
And okay. And what about Taco Del Mar? Are they happy with these? Is this what they wanted? And
well, they've been doing the same types of commercials for years now.
Yeah.
It's not like this is, you know, Quiznos, they've got a pepper bar, you know, one campaign, which polarizes people. Some people love that and other people hate it.
Yeah.
Anyway, and that's sort of got me thinking, there's a number of locally produced commercials that are horrible, especially car commercials, because the turnaround on those is so quick. The lifespan.
It's invariably the guy who works there or their top salesman, and they're good at being salesmen, but they look so oily.
Well, not even just that, but like the quality of the production.
Yeah. It's like they're shooting on high eight. And
well, it's like their nephew has a camcorder and he's got iMovie and he'll produce it. Yeah. And if that's the case, great. But
speaking of video production, I'm putting together our auction video for the organization I work for this year. So I'm using the newest version of Premiere, finally using it. Man, is it sweet. It's like they took all the things that you used to have to like go out and do in After Effects, and now you can do them in Premiere, so it's so much sweeter. I wish like my job was Premiere, because I could play with the thing for a year and not get tired.
Well, honestly, I look at these commercials going around and I think, boy, you know, you and I could have easily gone into business.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just as soon as once we got the initial ball rolling,
yep,
would not have been hard, because you look around at the quality. Although, you know, that does kind of, I have another friend who owns a video production company. Yeah. And I remember him telling me that he had talked to a local station about doing some spots for them.
Yeah.
And the rate they were going to pay was so abysmally low that he did, you know, it was
which
never
probably explains why they're, yeah,
you know, he never seriously considered it, but that was, you know, that was for a station itself trying to farm out some spots, which was weird, because you'd think they could just get their interns to do something.
Yeah.
But versus a paying corporate customer who, in theory, has a little more money.
Yep.
Anyway, it's fascinating how poor some of the local commercials are. Okay, moving on. John, my good friend John.
Yep.
Asked me earlier this week, in response to one of these podcasts, why do I hate Comcast so much?
Yeah, why do you hate Comcast so much?
I don't really know. It's hard to articulate. It's a number of things.
I'll tell you why I hate Comcast.
For so long, they were, I mean, sort of, it's a combination of Comcast / generally speaking, any cable company. They're a monopoly. You have no choice.
Yep.
You know, you're going to take whatever they deign to give you. They're periodically reducing the size of their basic package.
Yeah.
And shuffling more channels into, you know, put some money here packages.
Yeah.
As the rates continue to go up, meanwhile, they're telling Congress how, give us this break on, you know, give us a tax break on lines or something something like that, and the costs will go down. Surprisingly, the costs never go down to the consumer.
The only time Comcast even remotely got good was when satellite TV came into being. That was, cable was horrible, and now suddenly they're talking about all these innovation or anything, and it only happened because satellite TV provided an alternative.
Well, you know, their high def signal is incredibly compressed compared to satellite.
Yep.
I get probably something in the mail from them every 2 days about how the life Comcastic, which is a horrible campaign, and how I should switch over. And here's the introductory rate. Of course, they never tell you what the real rate is after the introductory rate lapses.
Yep.
But I just,
you know,
and you know, when John and I are roommates and living together, whenever the cable would go out, you know, it was never a horrendous week-long outage, but you're always at their mercy. I think I've almost never had a problem with my dish.
Yeah.
You know, one or two thunderstorms have caused some signal interference, but it's
They have these ads where they make it out like, It's the worst thing in the world. Satellite is awesome. Cable goes out way more often than that.
Yeah.
And well, let me tell you why I hate Comcast. Because in the past week, I've had 3 phone calls from robots at Comcast trying to persuade me to buy buy their digital phone service, which is essentially Vonage for twice as much money. So for $40 a month, I can get rid of my $15 a month Vonage and get long distance and free phone. Okay, so the phone call I got from them today, this is the phone number. It's 011-187-782-4228, which means that the phone call came from like Europe or somewhere. So whatever, either they screwed up on their caller ID, but 011, that's the international dialing number.
They're probably spoofing the caller ID.
It could be, but so in other words, Comcast is spoofing it. So I'll pick up the phone.
I don't know that it's like, a purposeful, let's try and fool them thing.
I agree, but it's bizarre. And the fact is they're calling my cell phone. I mean, that's cost me money, and it's a robot that's calling me, and they've done it 3 times.
I'm lucky.
I hate them.
Nobody's got.
Well, it's because I'm an existing customer. They're trying to upgrade me. Yeah. So yeah, I hate them.
Oh, so it's hard to articulate, you know, one specific reason, but I've got this visceral hate for Comcast.
I went to go to their website, and every time I go there, you know, to like pay my bill, it's like got some different look, and now they're having this 1-2-3 look. So their website, it's a mess because it's like this big primary color kind of thing where, and everything is in this 3, it's like live, work, play or something like that. So they have to like squeeze their choices into choices of 3 now. I'm just trying to figure out how the frig do I log on? And then I realize, oh, it's the, you know, it's the customers want or whatever. I'm just looking for a log on, but their design is totally geared towards the look and feel rather than the actual functionality. I was like, oh, I was getting so mad. I just couldn't stand it.
The only plus to my mind to Comcast is if you cannot get a satellite signal right now,
which is Richard Huffman's house, unless I cut down a tree,
you know, you can get a high def signal through Comcast without spending a fortune. You know, it's $50 a month and you get the box. Yeah. And I will say that is a value. Well, comparatively speaking, that's a good deal.
Yeah.
And I will fully admit that. However, as long as I have a choice, I will not use Comcast.
Yeah. I hear you. I'm just kind of waiting for the new TiVo DirecTV boxes, and then I'm getting
The TiVo Series 3 details are out, and apparently it's going to list for $800.
I'm going to be spending $800.
I mean, right
now you can get it's like a 30-hour box because it does have nothing in it, but it's like $420 for a DirecTV combination, DirecTV TiVo box. And that's the only way to go because you got to have the package if you're getting DirecTV.
I don't even know if that's the new.
It's not. It's the current
MPEG
one. MPEG-2? Yeah, it's MPEG-2. So it's like, what
you
do you do?
You should feel free to pee on that in the store.
Well, I mean, I'm just like, can I afford $800 a couple months? Right. That said, I actually gave my old box to my dad and my old satellite dish to dad. So he kind of owes me a little bit. So maybe he'll kick in on a little bit of the cost.
Good luck with that.
I love parents. What else on the list?
I'm going to do something momentous here.
Okay.
I am returning Hotel Rwanda.
Wow. Did you finally get through
it? I have had this for like a year.
I never actually saw it. You actually took it before I got a chance to see it.
Because my wife really wanted to see it. She's very much into foreign films.
Especially international kind of
not so much
issues,
your bizarro German collection.
Yep.
Or your Scandinavian weirdo collection.
Those are great movies.
But anyway, she really wanted to see this. And I know I knew it was a good movie.
Yep.
You know, Don Cheadle, instrumental in getting it made.
Yep.
But it's also one of those movies I didn't want to see.
Yeah,
it's in that Schindler's List category of documenting, well, not as a documentary, but set in a horrific, horrific circumstance.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you see human nature at its worst.
Yeah.
And this is even worse than than Schindler's List in and of that. There's nothing I can do about the Holocaust now, but there are Africa going on right now.
Yeah, in Darfur
region.
Yep.
Just, it's ridiculous. You know, on a, you know, genocidal whatever. Is it an act of genocide? Is it genocide? And so you watch something like this, and you feel lower than pond scum.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's something going on right now that you can, in theory, do something about, but you're not. You're sitting there on your couch watching a movie.
Yeah.
And so there's a tremendous, you know, there's the guilt, the liberal guilt going on.
So was it good?
It was a good movie. And so it was one of, it was on the shelf, our the little section of the shelf we have for Richard's borrowed DVDs. And I was like, you know, we're going to watch this, but we got to be in the right mood.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's not, you know, let's just turn off. It's not Pirates of the Caribbean 2. It's the opposite of that. You've got to be in the right intellectual mood and prepared to take a bit of a downer.
Yeah.
You know, even though it's supposed to be very inspirational, it's still a bit of a downer.
Yeah.
Because of the misery depicted. That being said, for that type of movie, it's a very good movie.
Yeah.
Don Cheadle is fantastic.
I love
it.
Don Cheadle. He was the other one. Him and Bob Yari both kind of got screwed out of producer credits on Crash. I mean, Don Cheadle should have an Oscar as producer for Crash, but they could, the rules say you can have like two producers. So Don Cheadle is another guy that I guess had nothing to do with Crash, yet it was he got that movie made, and he doesn't have an Oscar because, you know, so he's a cool dude. And this was another one he was heavily involved in.
He really is a great person and a great actor.
Yeah.
So I return Hotel Rwanda. Yay! To you.
Thank
as
you.
I continue to have, I what think I have Singles is one I borrowed. I have a few that you push on me, like, yeah, oh, you got to see this. And I'm like,
okay, so I've got forcing this on me.
I've got Stander and the Stuntman as the
Stander's
the
a good
two
one.
That, and I also have Fog of War, which I've had for a long time. Yep. Because I've been rereading, I've been reading Best and the Brightest, which has taken
Haberstam.
Me, it's taken me so long to go through that book.
Yep.
Because it's so dense and it's so much easier just to grab one of my pulpy science fiction novels instead of this. But I wanted to get Fog of War so that I could watch it again.
Yeah.
After reading Best and the Brightest to get that perspective. And it's just taken me forever.
Sweet.
Any new DVDs on your end?
No, I didn't do it because periodically I remember that, oh yeah, I've got HBO and TV and I haven't watched TV in a month. And here's the one beauty of Comcast that you don't have on the other. But although if you have a DVR, you could kind of have this effect. But they have this video on demand channels, and I have HBO on demand. So the beauty of it is I can sit down and go, oh, you know, I never saw the last season of The Wire, and I can sit down over 2 days and watch all 13 episodes of the best show on TV.
I admit that is a good feature.
It was awesome. So I did that. So I'm plowing
Which
through that.
I really don't think you get with satellite.
The only thing you can do is basically have a DVR and record them, and then wait till
sort
the
of.
End.
I mean, because I've heard some of the back end of the video on demand stuff for cable, and it's really interesting how they're really trying to balance the server space and the bandwidth of how much, you know, because if too many people try and watch it at once, it's going to crash.
Yeah.
Because they're really trying to walk this fine line of the available bandwidth for any one thing.
Well, you know, what's interesting about it is it's pretty clear with Comcast that they think the wave of the future is specialty content channels, which is essentially a channel you pay money for that has a bunch of content where there's new stuff coming in. Well, to do something like that, you have to really find something that has a whole lot of old stuff that people may want to watch because you can't produce that much new stuff. So they basically have two channels, and it's kind of funny. They have the Howard Stern channel, which of course I'm a subscriber to, and they have the WWE channel because both of them have hundreds and hundreds of hours of old shows and the ability to put new shows on them. And they're both very niche shows that are not going to appeal to the general public, but a fanatical few will follow them everywhere. But the thing is, so I'm paying $10 a month for it now, and I don't know how many other subscribers there are, but I'm trying to figure out if they can actually make money on this, because it would seem to me it's very expensive to put them on. And even if they get 500,000 people a month, it still seems like it's not going to cover its expenses. But I don't know. It is kind of awesome to be able to at any given time see 25 hours of Howard Stern if I want, knowing tomorrow there's going to be another hour or whatever. But basically, so I've sat there and watched The Wire. Now I'm almost all the way through Deadwood. And then I'm probably going to plow through, the Bill Maher show. And then I promise I'm going to give up this cable box and get rid of,
forget to tape, you know, the levies.
Oh yeah. And I got to tape the levies. They finally put that show on there, but I got to put it on tape, which I'm like, wow. Yeah,
I was trying to think of the last time I literally popped a VHS into my VCR.
I put an old tape in there just to see, oh, maybe I could tape on this one. And I realized in retrospect, the tape was like 12 years old and it instantly ate the tape. I pull it and I hear this, pull it out, and the tape is in like two pieces. And I realize, I think I better go get a new tape for this. You forget how, and then watching tapes, you realize how crappy the quality is. And it's amazing how long ago it was that you actually had tapes. So anyway, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that show too. That's it. That's all I have.
That's all on my list.
Cool.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else that springs to mind.
Coming up is Jackass, Borat. Isn't that like this month?
I don't know when Borat is released.
I thought it was September. Artie Lang's Beer League, which is, I don't know if they released that in Seattle, but I'm looking forward to that because I'm a Howard Stern fan. I don't know what else is coming up, though. It's like kind of the doldrums. It's like Labor Day, you know, they always release the movies nobody wants to see, like The Wicker Man or whatever.
Hollywood Land in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, oh, Hollywood Land and The Black Dahlia, both. I'm praying The Black Dahlia isn't going to suck because, oh my God, it's James Ellroy, it's Brian De Palma. I think it's going to suck, though. I personally think it's going to suck.
We'll see. I finally started seeing commercials for the new Sean Penn, All the King's Men. Jeffrey Wells has been talking about for a long 3 years
because it was filmed.
Basically, it's been bumped a year.
Yeah,
because they didn't think they could get the post production and editing done in time.
I heard that because it was a mess and they were trying to fix it.
You know, a million stories. Yeah. Why is a movie bumped? But in looking at these commercials, not at all compelling to me.
Yeah,
I could care less about Sean Penn as a, you know,
Southern politician.
Yeah, Southern politician trying to get elected and then, I guess, being corrupted.
That said, I loved the original movie. I can't remember the actor that played it, it was great. And Sean Penn, he was like a big, chunky, blustery guy. Sean Penn just seems like the wrong kind of guy for it. But, you know, he's a truly great actor. But I agree with you. I'm watching it going, this doesn't even remotely interest me at all. Yeah.
I'd like to point out to the listeners that Richard's laptop is sitting on a speaker stack, and I'm curious exactly how far away the speaker magnets are from your hard drive.
Considering that how light the speaker is and what a big piece of crap it is, I think you're gonna, you know, those little magnets that you would buy like to stick on your refrigerator. That's about how thick these magnets are. So.
You're the one who's chosen to put your laptop on top of it. So okay. Just wanted to point that out.
Thank you.
I haven't checked the email box recently. Let's go ahead and assume there was nothing there. If you would like to correspond with us, you guys rock. All one phrase. There's no spaces, no underscores, no hyphens. You guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com.
That's us.
And, I promise when I get home today, I'm going to write that email to our friends and family announcing that we're in iTunes now.
I think Edwina, our friend, is a subscriber now because I kept telling her about podcasts and podcasts and swear to God, in one ear and out the other and yada, yada, yada. But then she came over.
It's not your thing. It's not.
Well, but she came over. But no, but it honestly would be her thing. I kept telling her there's these Photoshop ones that you're going to freak over. And she came over and she goes, okay, tell me about them. I showed them and she just sat there with her jaw down, dropped. She was so excited. And I said, now, if you want our podcast, here's how you log on. So I think she's
I got to write that email. I got a bunch of stuff I got to do when I get home, aside from watch the Steelers.
And I got to design our dang game. Website.
But actually, one other thing I want to mention, and it'd be interesting to see how this goes. I sort of got turned on to the This Week in Media podcast, which I mentioned a little earlier. And there was one as I'm listening to this thing as I'm slowly disassembling this tree I had removed that is now sitting in my front yard. And I was listening to this and kind of in one ear and out the other. And it suddenly occurs to me what they're talking about is there's a new version of a program called Blender that has been released.
Yeah.
And essentially Blender is an open source, free 3D compositing/creation program.
Like Maya.
essentially like
and compositing, so it's like After Effects on that level too.
And I guess also you can do it to create video games because the original engine was used for that.
Really?
Honest, that's what I heard. And they were talking, you know, and it really occurred to me towards the end of that topic what they were discussing, and I rewound it and listened to it again. And essentially, it's like you said, it's like Maya, which I'm going to use your phrase, famously is
one. Meaning nobody's ever heard of it and it doesn't have it. Sorry.
Well, within upper end computer circles,
it's the thing. Certainly. It's Ice Age. It's you know,
it's one of the main tools you would use for a computer generated movie.
Yep,
not the only one, and certainly like Pixar has their own custom stuff, but you would use Maya, and you'd go out, and originally it cost like $10,000.
Yeah, or up to $18,000, depending on the license you have.
Right, and then it dropped down, and then it was $5,000, and then it was $1,500, yeah. Which I think, and maybe now it's even a couple $100 for a copy of Maya.
Yeah, it's sort of like Photoshop, you know, it's a professional, but everybody can have it.
And I know people who make video games, and you know, they said, you know, if you're interested in getting into video games, learn Maya. And which is sort of interesting when you step back and think about it, that makes sense.
Because of the 3D aspects.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that reminds me of something else I wanted to talk about. But, and it's a game called Blender, which they have available for both the Intel and PowerPC Macs. I mean, it's a really small program, and there's tons of tutorials. So I'm going through this Wikipedia book on basically how to get good at this thing. It'll be interesting to see if I have enough willpower to stick with it and try and learn this program, because as these guys are pointing out, prior to this new version, you know, Blender was okay, but you still would generally, if you had a choice, you'd want to use the pay versions, Maya or whatever equivalent expensive programs there were. You know, sort of comparing it to the difference between Photoshop and GIMP.
Yeah.
GIMP being the open source version of Photoshop,
which theoretically replicates at least the latest versions, but
does a lot of the same things, if not everything, that Photoshop does. People still say, but it's not Photoshop.
Yeah, because it's, first of all, they don't have a CMYK mode in it. It's only RGB.
I haven't gotten that much into it. But, and so they sort of approach it the same way. Yes, you can do a lot of the same things, but it's not Maya or Shake or whatever else. But with this new version, it's finally almost getting pretty close to, you know, a fully paid version.
Cool.
And they're saying, you know what, this is really valuable for, you know, an 11-year-old kid who finds this, sees the fact that The Elephant's Dream, which is like the Oscar award-winning animated short, which was made in Blender, sees that the tool is free, downloads it, and then spends their summer vacation learning how to do this.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, if an 11-year-old kid can do it, I can do it.
I know. That's the thing. And if you turn out you can't do it, then you feel really bad because an 11-year-old kid could do it.
Probably.
It's
incredibly complex putting this stuff together. So it'd be interesting to see if I have the willpower and the time to to vote to that.
I've spent the past 3 weeks totally involved with Dreamweaver, ASP, and a whole bunch of other stuff.
I should so get back into that.
My brain is so hurts, but there's so many cool things.
My web skills are so rusty right now.
I got to show you my website. I'm so very proud of it.
But, one last thing I want to talk about was the Zune.
The Zune.
The Microsoft Zune. A few more things.
As we now realize, the rebranded Toshiba Media Player.
Basically. the initial versions apparently might not even play video.
What? Is that the point to the thing, basically?
That's part of it. Definitely will have Wi-Fi.
I like that.
The click wheel apparently isn't even like a real Apple click wheel. It's like a fake.
Well, because doesn't Apple have a patent on it?
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
Anyway, it seems like the initial reaction more and more is negative.
Yep.
And saying, you know, Jay Allard, the dude behind the Xbox, may have been behind the Zune, but so far, it's not looking too promising.
Well, it's not built from the ground up. They're just rebranding some other thing.
You always kind of want to give it the benefit. Let it launch. Let it see what it can do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, because part of it is when you started hearing the initial rumors, there's a whole lot of, well, is this a portable gaming device? Can it be used as a portable gaming device?
Yep.
Is it going to be, you know, a little bit of everything? And looking at this, there's no way it's a portable gaming device. You'd have to plug it into some other. There's nothing on here that can be used as a controller or a joypad or a directional pad or joystick. And so that whole aspect leaves me confused.
Yeah. It's a product nobody needs or wants when other things can do it better and cheaper.
Well, it's, yeah, it's.
But who knows? You never know. I mean, we'll see how it turns out. At least you know the people behind it are the best and brightest at Microsoft, so maybe they know something we don't know.
Yeah, you always want to let something launch, give it the benefit of the doubt. But initially, it's just everyone. I kind of share the general feeling of shrugging and saying, eh.
Yeah. Yeah, but and there's nobody more respected by people like you and me at Microsoft than Allard. So you're just thinking, yeah, let's hope this isn't. I mean, you just feel bad if it doesn't do well because.
Well, and apparently part of the plan is to flood the channel.
Really?
Flood the retail channel and just have these things everywhere.
I've seen the 1 million posters printed up at a,
we'll,
at a thing. There's. I mean, they're it's an amazing, it's an entire warehouse filled of posters that say Zune on them.
And we'll see, because, you know, a lot of people are expecting a new iPod this Tuesday as part of the Apple presentation, whether it's just the new Nano or if they finally do a new regular iPod revision.
Think the likelihood is no.
If I'm a parent or if I'm a regular person who's not a tech dork,
yep.
And I see an iPod and I see a Zune,
yep.
I'm going with the iPod. There's got to be a really... and. Can normal people appreciate what Wi-Fi, you know, will normal people...
Nowadays they are. There's this gal I met today who's just clearly not a huge techie. And she goes, I got Wi-Fi yesterday. And she's walking around the house with her laptop. I think more, my dad, who's not a techie,
okay,
has Wi-Fi.
That might be more of a draw than I thought.
I think it's reached a mass, you know, thing where people are regular. It's so easy to install it and people are recognizing the value of it. The question is what you do with it. Is it Wi-Fi just so you can download stuff?
Well,
that's fine. Is it to stream stuff? That's another
thing. Problem number one is getting people to actually buy them.
Yeah.
To compel them to, if they see, you know, 200 of these on an end cap at Best Buy, to actually buy one. And then pass that to be good. Like the interface. If the interface isn't good, if the UI isn't good, it won't work, as we've seen from just about every other MP3 player that isn't an iPod.
Yeah, literally every single other one.
So there's two significant problems there.
Which is funny that they basically lost the suit. They settled it with Creative, because Creative's UI is terrible. But the fundamental apparently was enough to similar,
right,
but it was a terrible UI. It's Apple's just, they figured it out.
So yeah, you look at the Zune and you think, well, if it's not supposed to do video, and there's rumblings about Microsoft doing their own video thing along with Amazon and Apple, and you really have to wonder what's going to happen.
Please.
Okay. I
think of the consumer.
Well, that's what Apple does.
I know.
And they're happy to take your money for that service.
So we're 3 minutes into officially the longest podcast ever. 1 hour, 18 minutes and 8 seconds.
Well, I think actually our first...
Oh, they were like super longs. So,
yeah,
well,
they were like more
the 2 hour.
When I was going on and on about Firefly and Serenity.
That's right.
All right, we can wrap it the heck up. Again, you guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com. I am Matt.
And I am Richard.
And I ate too much pizza.
Adios, muchachos. I think I ate too much pizza too.